Hi, I'm Bonnie Winfrey along with Pat Perrier today. Today's podcast is all about how to be in your best health. We will be talking to two experts who deliver results when it comes to transforming the body into a well-oiled machine. First up is someone I am training with right now, and that is the wonderful Gloria Dollinger. Gloria Dollinger graduated from University of Illinois at Champaign-Urbana with a degree in health and safety studies, and from the University of Illinois at Chicago in nutrition and medical dietetics. She is a registered dietitian, certified in obesity and adult weight management. Gloria is the nutrition supervisor at the Joliet Park District's Inwood Athletic Club. There, she supervises the nutrition programming, coaches individuals and groups on healthy eating, and as a NASM certified personal trainer, instructs individuals and small groups in private training sessions. Gloria, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Bonnie. Thanks so much for having me.
You know, at the gym, I always see this one statement when I go around and around walking, and it says, don't let age change you. Change the way you age. I mean, that statement really, really, really sticks to me, you know, and it means something because it says that the person is responsible for the change in their lives and the way they develop. So I'm so glad you're here today to give us some simple health tips about aging and how we can break through some of the noise.
Yeah, I'm really excited to be here. I think everybody's getting excited about how they're aging, and it's a big buzzword, you know, aging gracefully, or, you know, just trying to keep up with the things that you want to do as you're getting older. And so I think it's really important that individuals kind of set a goal for themselves, that what they want to be doing, and then think of a plan that's going to help maintain and get you there. So it's very exciting.
So what kind of tips can you give us?
Well, I think what I like to do is start with individuals and try to figure out what their goal is and what they really are trying to do. Because there's not a one size fits all, and everybody's an individual. And so we want to make sure that the program or the suggestions are really going to help them. And I think people have to look at themselves and kind of look at how they're eating and what their physical activity is, see where they're at. And then from there, make a plan. At the Park District, one of the things I like to utilize is we have an in-body assessment, and it really helps give me a lot of information on individuals' muscle mass, their fat mass, their basal metabolic rate, so that I can kind of start with a point of where their calorie needs are. And then from there, we have a discussion on what they want to do. You know, not everybody wants to lose weight. A lot of people are trying to gain muscle. And we know as we're aging, one of the most important things is maintaining or gaining muscle mass as we're getting older. And I think a lot of adult individuals have never really thought about that before. They think about, I got to go for a walk. And I have a lot of friends that do a lot of cardio. But we really know the importance now, and the research is really showing that adult individuals really need to be strength training. Starting around the age of 40, you will lose about 10% of your muscle mass if you're not really doing anything with focus to maintain or gain muscle. And so the body just, in the aging process, naturally loses muscle. And so you have to kind of fight against it. And so you need a plan. And you can start with body weight, because a lot of times people are more comfortable with that. And then if they get more comfortable in the gym, we try to get them doing a little more with weights and get a little more strength in maintaining that muscle. And you have to push a weight that's maybe a little hard. You know, not everything can be easy. You might need to sweat a little bit.
That's a good thing.
Yeah. That's what I tell my basic yoga students. I say it's basic. It's not easy.
Right. And you have to just, but again, I want people to be walking. I think walking outside especially is so great, you know, being outside with nature and being able to walk outside.
Yes.
But we still need to have that little strength component. Yoga is a great body weight type of program to really keep yourself fit and maintain that muscle mass. But what I'm seeing is my older individuals really need to have a purposeful plan with the strength training. And so that's what I try to do. I try to give them nutritional guidance and then along with the strength training component of that and help them move based on what they want to do and what they like. You know, I don't want them doing stuff that they don't want to do.
The reason why I train with Gloria is because she is really an expert. You know, sometimes you see trainers, they don't really look the part or anything like that, but you look the part. And for years, I have seen you, you know.
Well, I work at it.
Yes, I know. For years, I've seen you just advise people in nutrition as well as fitness and everything else. And I've seen like results from other people.
Yeah.
But what happened to me was I broke my foot.
Yeah.
And we did one of those body assessments on me, and I was surprised to find out that my lower extremities were weak as a result of that.
Yeah.
So what Gloria has done is she's developed a plan for me to build my extremities back up, and it's been fun.
Yeah.
Sometimes well, I'm one of those people who like to exercise, though.
And that's helpful. You know, not everybody likes to exercise. Yeah. But, you know, we have a great group at the gym. And so it's really nice to have a variety of people. What I like, you know, at Inwood, we have all different ages and populations. And it's really nice to have this mixture of young and quote, quote, old. And everybody gets to see what's that. It's not really age determination about being active and being mobile. And they're all doing different things, you know. My main thing is lately is trying to get, I have a group of friends who are big runners and trying to get them to do more strength training.
Yeah.
They love the running aspect of it, but as we know, with the balance and longevity, we need to make sure we're maintaining that muscle mass. And so then, too, with that component is with our older population is coaching them on a proper way of eating that's going to allow that muscle mass to be maintained. Because as we get, you know, as we age, we our taste acuities change. Maybe our likes and dislikes change. And you as you get older, you don't need as many calories as you did when you were younger. And so, but the nutrients such as the calcium and the fiber and the protein and just the minerals, the vitamins, those stay the same. And so now you've got to get all those nutrients in a little bit less food. And so how you eat and how you manage that eating pre and post working out can really play a difference in having that muscle gain or maintaining your muscle as you get older.
And it also has to do with whether a person has like a chronic ailment or certain medications.
Correct.
Which may interfere with absorption of vitamins and minerals.
Yes, very much so. And so a lot of times I have to inquire about what medications people are on, counterindications of things. Also, you got to find out what people like. You know, I try not to make a recommendation of food that they don't like. I mean, I'm not here to force somebody to eat something, but I want them to have some guidance. And so, like you asked me some of the tips or whatever, and one of the biggest things is really getting people to focus on their fruits and vegetables because we really do want them to get the nutrients in the food first. And then if you need a supplement, it's based on, you know, kind of really if you're getting all those calories and you're eating properly, but you're still not getting all the stuff you need, then a supplement is where you might want some benefit. And some people don't like certain foods that have, you know, a high nutrient value. And so then I got to maybe recommend a supplement with them. But so fruits and vegetables, I coach my clients that they need a minimum of 5 servings a day. And I have to say, I've been doing this for over 30 years and most people get 2 or 3.
Right.
I mean, it's rough to get the food in, especially vegetables.
Yeah.
I think people lean a little heavier on the fruit. And I am very pro having fruit, but not to the exclusion of having a vegetable, because again, they all have different nutrient values.
So let's break it down a little bit.
Yeah.
Just say breakfast, lunch, dinner, snacks. Just can you give an idea of what that would look like in a day?
Well, again, breakfast right now with most of my clients, what I try to focus on is making sure they're getting a little bit of protein. in at that breakfast time. And for most individuals, baseline, they need to be having about 20 to 30 grams of protein in the morning. Okay, so that's your breakfast time. And that's breakfast to right before lunch.
Right.
So it may not all have to be all at one time, but I want you to get about 20 to 30 grams. And so for a lot of individuals, they do toast, they do cereal with milk. Well, they might get about 8 to 10 grams, but they're not getting anywhere near the 20. So we got to really kind of, you know, kind of guide them. What can they add to that meal? And so then, too, if they're doing fruit, I want them really maybe at breakfast time only to have one serving. You know,
just one
serving of fruit, especially if they're having toast or something else, because they're already getting some carbs in that.
Okay.
And then making sure they're having the protein. Now, this is where some of my smoothie people might not like what I have to say here, but you have to really be careful about making the smoothies and adding too much fruit.
Yes.
I find people just add like 4 servings of fruit, and that's a lot of carbohydrates along with whatever else they might be having in the morning. And so, you know, I want them to have good protein. So you might have, you know, your protein powder might have around 20 grams of protein, but that's just put maybe a half a banana and maybe a few sprigs of pineapple, not the whole banana and the, you know, a whole bunch of pineapple and then some strawberries and, you know, and pack it all in. So having a little bit of a mixture. And for most people, when they're trying to, maybe they think about calories, but maybe not, you know, I want them to have between 300 to 500 calories in that morning time too. And I think a lot of, especially women who think about they're trying to lose weight or I don't want to gain weight, you know, what we say is they diet during the day and then they feast at night. And so breakfast maybe only be 100 calories or 20, you know, 100, 200 calories, and they're missing out. And a lot of people work out in the morning. And so it's really important that they, especially after the workout or right before the workout, have a little bit of something to make sure that then that strength training or that cardio, you're getting the benefit, the biggest bang for your buck from that exercise and making sure you're eating in a timely manner.
What about snacks?
Well, I don't have a general, like, you have to have a snack. I think I want people to look and see what they're doing. Sometimes when you introduce, like, you have to have a 3 o'clock snack, it causes somebody to start eating and get the munchies and then they continue eating.
Yeah.
So I like to look and see what the meal, what they're doing naturally and what their, you know, what their lifestyle is. And if I feel like they need maybe a mid-afternoon snack because they didn't really have a bigger lunch, then that might be appropriate. But I'm not necessarily say that people have to have snacks. And I know for some time people thought, oh, you have to have 5 to 6 meals a day. Well, then people then you overeat.
No, if you're
That's
Michael Phelps,
saying.
You can have 5 or 6 meals a day.
Exactly.
Or if you're Simone Biles, I mean, the average desk jockey does not need that much food.
No.
And I think when you talk about the mini meals, somebody says, oh, it's a mini meal. So I'm going to have some yogurt. I'm going to have a banana. Then I'm going to have this. And then you've got 400 calories in what was supposed to be just eat an apple.
Correct.
Or worse, they would think 5 meals are really 5 meals.
That's what I'm saying.
With more calories for each one of those.
So we try to, so I try to work with kind of what they're doing. Now, if somebody has a very physical job, they might need a snack. It's, or they might need to have some kind of beverage midday that gives them a little more sodium intake. You know, so, you know, you work with everybody on what they're doing. But as a whole, most people don't need an afternoon snack.
So what about lunch?
So lunch.
Oh, first of all, I should say the pyramid.
Well, I'm not a big. No.
That's what I wanted to know.
No,
I didn't think you were a fan.
No. I think we should kind of not think about the food pyramid. And what I like to tell people to do is when you have your plate, your half your plate should be veggies at lunchtime and at dinner time. So half the plate. So like if going back to that snack. So like you said, an apple. If you want that second piece of fruit for the day, that can be that apple.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, so if that's a great snack, you know, to have by itself. But I try to encourage people just to kind of look at what they're doing and half your plate vegetables and really something green or orange or red, you know, not. We don't really count corn and peas in the vegetable category because they're very starchy. So it kind of counts more in that carbohydrate realm. So I'm talking about broccoli, cauliflower, green beans, tomatoes, mm-hmm. carrots, you know, all those kind of things. Yeah. So you want to really load up your plate with that. But then again, at lunchtime, you want to look to see about having about 20 to 30 grams of protein. And this mm-hmm. is where I find a lot of women don't, they do that salad, but they're not putting the protein on the salad. Mm-hmm. So you 3 ounces of chicken, let's say, is about 21 grams of protein. Mm-hmm. So that's like the baseline start. And maybe you put a little seeds on that. If you're having a roll or something with it, it might have 2 or 3 grams of protein in that. So, you know, but your baseline is a minimum of 3 ounces of protein. It can be vegetarian too. So that means you mm-hmm. have to go more with lentils, legumes, chickpeas, you know, yep. things like that to add to that salad if you're going to do that. But you got to be very conscious of what you're doing because it's hard to get all that protein with high fiber foods.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Is there for plant-based, you know, a protein that you would recommend? I know you mentioned
well, I think if you're a true vegetarian and you're only doing plant-based foods, then you have to go real heavy with lentils and beans and nuts, mm-hmm. seeds.
Yeah.
And you have to be willing to eat probably more than you might want sometimes because mm-hmm. they're very high in fiber, those foods. And so it might fill you up. And so you have to be aware of what you're putting on that plate because then you might not be getting enough.
Right.
And the main thing with vegetarians, and I'll just throw it out here, is that because they don't do animal products, you know, some of their B vitamins can be a little low. So we want to make sure that they're getting ample, you know, B vitamins. So they may have to take a supplement for that. And then if they're not doing any dairy, the other part of that equation is calcium. And then especially bone health, we need calcium mm-hmm. and milk products have the most amount of calcium per serving, which is a cup. Has a little over 300 and the lowest end of the calcium is you want to have about 800 milligrams a day. But after you hit 45 to 50, we bump that up to 1200 milligrams because of the risk of osteoporosis. And so you need now not just 3 servings, you need 4. Mm-hmm. And so if you're not, then that's when a calcium supplement would come into play.
Right. So now we're at dinner. Mm-hmm. So do you believe in eating heavy for breakfast, lighter for lunch, and then lighter for dinner?
Kind of as a rule of thumb, kind of based on your exercise and your lifestyle, uh-huh. I do think people need to have a little bit bigger lunch that is a little more protein. And then
That's
at dinner, you can go a little lighter.
That's good to know.
So as a just my general rule of thumb. Dinner, I don't tend to have a carbohydrate at my dinner. Like I don't do rice or potato. Sometimes I'll do a potato, just kind of depends on what we're doing as a family. But I always make sure I have a big salad and then I have my protein. And if I have a starch, yes, but it's not an always thing. But again, kids or young adults, you know, they would want that starch. It's going to give them more of the energy. But again, I'm over 60. I don't need all that, you know, so you know, so I'm getting my carbohydrates earlier in the day and not so much at nighttime. So dinner time, again, 20 to 30 grams of protein. So you either got to get through animal products or plant-based. You need, again, to have that protein content. So as a rule of thumb, we say minimal for women around 50 grams of protein and for men, 60. Now, that's minimal. If you're trying to gain muscle, you're going to need more than that. So I really say with my clients, I'm shooting for 90. If I don't tell them 90, they're not going to get even 80. If I tell them 70, they're going to maybe get 50. So so I try to say that 20 to 30, 20 to 30, 20 to 30 at each meal to give them a simple thing to follow, you know, and if they can at least get the 20 each meal, they're going to have at least 60 grams of protein.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so.
And when we talk about people being in shape, mm-hmm. exercising, mm-hmm. Just say for younger people in their 20s, sometimes they don't really think about their health. They mm-hmm. feel like they can eat anything they want to. They don't have to exercise, some of them, you know, some of them. What do you say to them?
Well, what we're really seeing now is that we have a lot of young individuals that are carrying a lot of visceral fat. And we call that, you know, that belly fat, the mid, you know, in the mid range. And that really increases your risk for a lot of diseases. And so I wish they had a little more thought process in that. And the sugar, high sugar content really kind of lends towards that belly fat holding, you know, that belly fat gain. So with young people, I really try to encourage them to keep the sugar content down. Now, it's not to say that they can't have it, but it really needs to be watched. And I think as a whole, they tend to eat a lot of very highly processed foods with a lot of sugar and sodium in them. And if they could go to a little more just homemade, you know, regular food and not so much prepackaged, they would be a little bit better off.
That is great. Mm-hmm. So I've watched you through the years and people that you've trained, and I know you have some transformation stories. Yeah. Can you share some of those with us?
Well, I do. I have an individual, which is just interesting. I've been doing different weight management. I call them management because not everybody's going to be losing a huge amount of weight. And I do them pretty much every year and have changed them up over the years. And I remember one day I was out on the stadium and I had my running group out there, and an individual who was walking the track stopped me. And she's like, "Gloria, I know you don't remember me, but I took your class around 5 years ago." And she goes, "I really wasn't ready to hear the information then." But she goes, "You know, last year I got all your information back out and I'm trying to follow it." And she had lost 60 pounds since she re-engaged herself. And it is, nutrition is emotional and it is kind of cognitive. Remember, you gotta remember when you're young, you know, food is comfort. Food is, you know, you cry, you get food, you know. A lot of emotions are tied with food. And so it takes some time to kind of figure those things out and where you want to go with all that. And so I try to work with people to become aware of some of their patterns and things that they do, because we can't change something if we don't become aware. So I always say, you know, I'm giving people information. They may or may not take it at that time. And that's okay. If they even change one little habit, maybe not everything, but if they change one habit, it's going to improve their overall health. That's awesome.
I think the thing to speak to that is one of the things that I've struggled with was the old fashioned, there are starving children in China. So you have to finish what's on your plate.
I think we all grew up at that.
I mean, really? Yeah. But getting past that, one of the things I ended up doing was buying myself some pretty plates that were smaller. And those are my plates. Nobody else eats off those plates. So it means, like, instead of a dinner plate, which is what now, 12, 16 inches, it's a little 9-inch plate. And that has been remarkable, because eating is also visual. So you think, oh, my plate's full, I'm good here. Instead of my plate being the size of to feed four people is full.
Pat, that's awesome, because when my kids were in high school, they were all in sports and they were the volume of food they consumed. So I started doing that when my kids were, you know, in their teenage years, because I was like, I can't compete. They got these plates full. And they're like, you know, so it was just easier. I went to our salad plate and I've been using that ever since. It's my main plate. And then I might do the salad separate, because we usually have a salad and then some kind of cooked vegetable. So I get the cooked vegetable on my plate. But I think that's great, because you're, yes, people are visual. People want foods that taste good, you know. And so we don't want to negate that. And we don't want them to have to say they can't have those things, because I think saying to someone they can't have something just makes them want it even more. So you figure out how they can do it. I had a client one time and his favorite thing was ice cream. Well, he said, okay, we're going to figure this out and we're going to let you have that ice cream every day. And because we let him have it every day, eventually it wasn't every day. It was maybe two or three times a week, because he didn't feel like this, like this whole anxiety about the, oh, I can't have ice cream anymore. But we gave it a little, you know, different bowl size. We managed the bowl size and I let him have a variety, and it really works out nice. So you, again, it's finding things that are going to work for individuals and then helping them through that. Again, I'm not a one size fit all. I think there's a lot of good programs out there, or, you know, all these different patterns of eating. And if it works for you, great. And also it might work for a time and then you got to switch to something else. You know, we get bored. So we got to try one thing and then go to something else. And that's okay.
For years, I've heard different women say when they go out, they only eat half their food. Mm-hmm. And I've never been one of those people. I might take it home or mm-hmm. something like that,
yeah.
but not to initially set it aside.
Oh, yeah.
I did that for the first time last week, and I found that to be comforting, you know, to be able to do that, to cut down. Do you recommend that? Or
Well, obviously, when you dine out, most of the food is it's way too much. Yeah. So I do think that you should probably have about half of what they give you. Mm-hmm. The other strategy right now, my husband and I, if he gets the entree and I just always ask for mm-hmm. a plate and I just take a little bit of the protein. And, you know, again, if he has a vegetable or I might order a vegetable on the side. So we don't need two entrees, mm-hmm. you know, unless it is some restaurants. I like to take the leftovers home to have for lunch the next day. Right. So I might get my own meal there. But, you know, I think you got to figure out what's going to work for you. And we feel so much better because both mm-hmm. of us didn't overeat or have right. too much. So it's nice.
I think the thing, too, is to give yourself permission.
Yes.
Not only, like you were saying, with your person with the ice cream,
yeah.
but if something happens and you eat the poor boy,
Yeah. Yeah.
Tomorrow's another day.
Yeah.
I mean, so many people get into this mentality that I slipped up, so now I am failing. I will never be able to do this.
Yep.
It's a slip up. We all do it.
Exactly. And I think one of the biggest things is also as a coaching tip or a little mm-hmm. tip is have individuals eat their meals in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. I don't care if it's potato chips. I don't mm-hmm. care if it's, you know, pie. mm-hmm. Eat it in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. You're just so much more aware. It's that mindless eating that we do in the family room or the TV mm-hmm. room.
Like watching TV. And all
yeah.
that.
I get really nervous when people tell me that they're get the TV tray and they watch television as they're eating, I mean, their dinners. And I'm like, oh, dinner is such a important time if you have even if you have just a spouse or a friend, having conversation and having that mealtime be conversational. Mm-hmm. And I think mm-hmm. it has a lot to do with helping people be a little more calmer at the meal. And, you know, it just can really have a more bonding, especially mm-hmm. in a family dynamics. But if you have the TV and everybody's watching TV, so much gets missed out.
Yeah.
So I try to tell people, be very conscious. If you want that cake, that's okay. Just eat it in the kitchen.
Just one last question.
Yeah.
As far as nutrition and fitness, mm-hmm. do you find that it is helpful in reversing different diagnoses that people may be going through?
I can't really say a blanket statement on that, really, mm-hmm. because I think it's all about the diagnosis. Now, we do know with some people who are type 2 diabetics that those things can be reversed. Now, I wouldn't say reverse, but you can maybe get off your medications or take a less medication or not even start a medication because you change your eating pattern and you are moving more. We find if you have exercise and your body's the muscle and the sugar work better when you're a more active person.
Right.
And so I think that is definitely one place that we can see improvement as far as a diagnosis or a disease when people start eating better and moving more.
Mm-hmm. That is great.
Yeah.
Wow. You are just full of information. A wealth of knowledge.
Yeah, but can I just,
go ahead.
Especially as people are getting older, I think you mm-hmm. got to really think about what do you want to be doing in the next 10 to 20 years? Mm-hmm. What do you see yourself physically doing and wanting to do?
Mm-hmm.
And then you need to be practicing or doing the activities that are going to get you to that or keep you doing what you're doing. Like mm-hmm. I love to ski and I want to be able to ski with my grandkids. Mm-hmm. So that means I got to be able to ski into my 70s. So I got to keep mm-hmm. that going. And so I am very cognitive of what I do and making sure that goal is always out there, that I can still be active. I got to be able to put my boots on, you know. So if you have whatever goal it is for you, somebody wants to do a hike when, you know, or go on a vacation and they want to be able to walk without having a cane, you know, all these things. So that means you have to be practicing that. That means you have to be physically working your legs. You got to mm-hmm. be working your core for the balance, you know. And I think we need to have the goal because I hope that motivates us. Just losing weight isn't a good motivator in the long. I think it is short term maybe for some, but mm-hmm. lifelong living is about how do you want to live your life?
And how strong do you want to be?
What do you see yourself doing? I don't want to be bedridden in my 80s. Mm-hmm. I want to be active in my 80s. So you got to think about what you're doing and how you're going to get there and start.
Absolutely.
The start.
The start is the first thing. And once you get that motivation, you also understand your motivation is going to change over time.
Totally. Yes. And what you're really able to do. And that's okay. Because we do know once really people get into their 70s, the decline in muscle mass becomes more great. And so it's a little harder to maintain that. So, think about still, I think I look at all the people that come to the gym and the ages. How fun is it to see these active older individuals and the community that they have because they're there at the gym and they keep a track of one another. And it's just fun to see that with individuals.
I witness that every day. Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It really is. And I just want to thank you for all you do.
Well, thank you.
In transforming lives and helping people. And I thank you for all the great advice that you've given me. Yeah. And
you're welcome.
For the fact
I'm
of
very happy
even,
to do it.
Yeah, and my health improving and everything.
Yep.
You're just a jewel.
Well, thank you.
And our listeners have just benefited from a taste of your knowledge.
Yeah.
And we just want them to know that you are accessible. And how can they get in touch with you?
You can reach out at the Park District at the Inwood Athletic Club. And I can be reached there. My email is just gdollinger@julietpark.org. That's the best way. I'm not in my office a lot, but I can check my emails from anywhere. So it's just gdollinger, D-O-L-L-I-N-G-E-R, @julietpark.org.
Thank you so
You're
much
welcome.
For teaching us all how to improve our health.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, coming Thank up, you. We're going to have another person, a massage therapist, who's going to tell us how we can improve our health as well. Well, our next guest is Lawrence Lombroso, and he's a graduate of Pima Medical Institute in Mesa, Arizona. He is currently a lead licensed massage therapist at Circle Pain Clinic in Costa Grande, Arizona. He's responsible for the assessment of patients and establishing a plan of care for them. He monitors the patient's progress, adjusting their plan as needed. And he is also responsible for instructing and training other licensed massage therapists. He has a lifetime of experience in the martial arts. He's a black belt in American combat karate. Lawrence is also a wellness advocate and motivational speaker. I've had the privilege of having his magical hands on my body for a massage, and he is truly unique. And when you talk about healing hands, this is what you experience with Lawrence. He's really amazing. There are all kinds of people in the Chicago area talking about how great it is to receive a massage from Lawrence. It's hard to kind of explain through audio and not see it visually, but when he's massaging you, you know that there's something fantastic going on in your body. And you know that you're reaching an ultimate in health when he is the master behind the massage. Lawrence, I just want to thank you for what you do because you're amazing. How did you get interested in being an LMT?
Well, let me respond to that great introduction. First of all, I'm extremely humbled. It was my honor to meet you and Keith, and it was my honor to work on both of you guys. So the honor was mine 100%. You guys are absolutely amazing people. And we'll probably talk a little more about this as we go on, but a therapist a lot of times can only be as good as the patient. So when we're in a session, it's almost like a teamwork, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's really an amazing experience, the connection that the therapist and the patient will have. And it's almost like we're working in conjunction with each other. So, yeah, the honor's mine. And it was easy to work on you because you were fantastic patients.
Wow. That's one of the things I'm going to miss about being in Arizona. that I won't have you for the massage, you know, in the future. Well, a little background information. My husband and I, we took a what we call a health vacation, and we went down to the Circle Clinic, and it was amazing. And that's where I met Lawrence. And, you know, it was like massages every day and cold therapy and all kinds of other treatments. And I believe my body is much stronger as a result of being there. And it was really, really, really a positive experience. But one of the greatest things, like I said, is to experience Lawrence and his massage techniques. Now, this is the big thing for me is martial arts. How did this come into play with what you do now?
Oh, absolutely. It was really a fantastic experience. Let me explain. When I graduated high school, I was always very active in high school. I was a natural athlete. You could say I always did well in baseball, football, basketball, all of that. But then when I graduated high school, I wanted to stay active, but I wanted to do something a little different. So I said, let me try martial arts. And I had great expectations for myself because I was a good athlete. Wasn't the case. When I got down to the martial arts studio, it was not the case at all. I was extremely humbled when I got down there. I couldn't believe what these people were able to do with their bodies. It was amazing. People in their 60s were just as proficient in their technique as people in their 20s. I had people half my size, half my weight, females throwing me all over the room, punching at that the eye couldn't even pick up their hand speed, kicking over their head. It was amazing. I knew right away that these people knew how to condition themselves, and they had the knowledge to know the full potential of their bodies. And that's what really set me on this journey. I said, there's so much out there to know. I got to tap into this. I really have to tap in. So again, with some mild conditioning to the body, and some knowledge, it was absolutely amazing that what the body was able to do and actually wanted to do. What really struck me as well is that people in their 60s were very, very healthy and still proficient in what they were doing. And I says, wow, this is really amazing. I want in on this. So I stood long-term in the martial arts, got promoted to black belt. And when you take the black belt test, you're going through it's a whole panel of black belts that are judging you. It's really unnerving. It's a crazy experience. But anyway, long story short, I got promoted. And every senior black belt will give you some words of wisdom, you know. And one said to me, you have been trained and now you know how to hurt. To really complete yourself, now you know you have to learn how to heal. That hit me like a ton of bricks.
Yeah.
I was just, that just knocked me over. I just couldn't believe that. And I knew at that time there was something more that I had to do. My journey was far from over. So I'm going to date myself a little bit here, Bonnie. This was before the days of the internet. So for now,
okay.
I'm going to go to the library. Remember that, Bonnie?
I remember.
I had to go to the library and look up stuff, and I started accumulating knowledge, and it was good. It was really good. And as an instructor, I became an instructor. I was helping my students with their wellness and everything was going good. But one day I got into a car accident, had to go to the chiropractor to get adjusted, and he was doing his adjustments. And then he said, I want you to see my massage therapist. I said, okay. So I got a massage from this guy and I felt amazing. And I said, that's it. That's the part I'm missing. I need to enroll in school to take everything to the next level. That's how my entry into massage therapy came about.
Oh, wow.
That's interesting because my sister-in-law had a similar experience of having the massage and going through a treatment with a therapist, and that spurred her own interest in becoming a massage therapist as well.
Mm-hmm. I'm not there though.
You'll get there.
But Lawrence,
I'm listening.
How important is blood flow when you're talking about the massage therapy?
Yeah, yeah,
experience.
Blood flow is absolutely critical. I don't want to offend anybody by this, but if you read the Bible says the life is in the blood. So mm-hmm. when you analyze the blood, there's a lot of different things in the blood, but we'll keep it really simple. One of the things that's in the blood is oxygen. The body requires oxygen to stay alive. This is pretty critical. Now, what happens because of the American lifestyle is all of our muscles over time contract a little more. And you were able to do things 20 years ago that you can't do now. And most of us say, well, we're just getting old. No, that's not the case. It's just the case of the muscles contracting. And now you have less range of motion. So you can't do the things you used to do when you were a kid. Okay. How does that relate to blood flow? If you were to get a muscle and splice it and then look at it under a microscope, you would see all these little tiny tubes. Those are blood vessels and capillaries. So when the muscle contracts, it's contracting on those tiny tubes, and it's very difficult for blood to get through. And if you guys have a question, just stop me and we'll
no, go ahead.
But anyway, it's very difficult for the blood to get through when the muscle contracts in those tiny tubes. It's almost like if you have a hose and the car tire sits on top of the hose, no water could trickle out. That's what's happening. So our contracted muscles are inhibiting blood flow. So when we inhibit blood flow, our body is not getting the oxygen it needs. Okay, what does that mean? When our body isn't oxidized, we tend to build up carbon. This is very, very bad because carbon creates an acidic environment in our bodies. I'm just going to tell you a quick story, and then we're going to get back to this, okay?
Okay,
if you were in the woods and you're going on a hike and it's a hot day and you forgot to put water in your canteen, and you see two choices where you can get water. One is a still pond, one is a running river. Intuitively, you're going to get the water from the running river because you just feel it's cleaner. The still pond is like, oh, all that yucky stuff is in there. I don't want to drink from there. So you go to the running river where it's the constant cleanse because it's constantly moving. Does that make sense? So any impurities in that water is getting flushed out. That's what we want our circulatory system to do, is flush out all that carbon buildup. Because when carbon builds up, like the ponds, it creates a very acidic environment. What's the problem with an acidic bodily environment is that all the bad guys, all the diseases, all the pathologies, they love that acidic environment and they flourish. So to get rid of all those bad guys, we want to flush it out with good blood flow, which carries oxygen, which pushes all those toxins out of us and makes our bodies more alkaline, which is really healthier for us. A lot of people say when they have good blood flow, they say, I felt like I took a shower on the inside. I like that analogy. They say, I feel
too.
So cleansed. I feel like I took a shower on the inside. Now, just if you ever lined up a bunch of dominoes, you hit one domino, they all start falling down the line. So one of the bad byproducts of an acidic bodily environment is alarms go off in your body saying, hey, this is not healthy. We need to make it more alkaline. This is your body now talking.
Mm-hmm.
So your body knows to make your bodily environment more alkaline. It says, hey, we need calcium. Calcium will raise your alkaline level.
Yep.
The problem is it's cannibalizing your bones to get the calcium. So now what happens after 10 or 20 years of this, when you start getting thinning of the bones, osteoporosis, you see where it goes. So just by keeping the blood flow in your body oxidized, you stay away from the acidic environment. And not just thinning of the bones, but so many other potential pathologies don't even have a chance to generate themselves because of the healthy environment. Do you have any questions so far?
No, I think
this resonates a lot with like some of the Ayurvedic training I had as a yoga teacher, because they talk about the body holding things and moving the prana around, or the chi, or the life force, and that's basically what you're talking about.
Oh, absolutely. That's one of the things. That is so cool that you said you were a yoga instructor.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I bow to you right now. Yoga is absolutely fantastic. I urge all of my patients to get involved in yoga because that is so important. It really is. I'll get to that in a little bit. Mm-hmm. But anyway, another thing that the blood carries is water. It has a lot of water in it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we need to keep our internal organs hydrated. So if there's not, if we don't get blood flow, we don't get water, and all those internal organs, I'm going to use another analogy, should look like a plump, juicy grape, fully hydrated, nice, plump, and juicy. If we have bad blood flow, we don't get water to those internal organs, they shrivel up and they become a raisin. None of us want our internal organs to look like that.
No, not at all.
So when we start looking at this, wow, the life really is in the blood, like the Bible says, and there is so much science to back this up. So blood flow is absolutely critical. There was also, and I recommend this book, it's called Let It Flow. It's by Dr. Edmund Kwan. He's a plastic surgeon. And listen to this. This will really rock you. He says most people come in around 50 years old to get plastic surgery done, you know, a facelift or whatever they want, nose job, whatever they want done. So anyway, he said that, and you've probably seen people, they're 50, but their skin looks like they're 20. But there's other people that are 50 and their skin looks like it's 90. We've seen them, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So when he would make his incision on a person with skin that looked younger, he noticed there was better blood flow. And on the incision where the people look significantly older than their age, there is very poor blood flow.
Mm.
So, I mean, it's right there for all of us to see. We got to keep the blood flowing. It's so critical.
Now, I have had massages in the past, you know, not really like on a regular basis, like every day when I was there at the clinic. But is there anything that sets an LMT apart from any other practices in the medical community?
Oh yeah. When you're a licensed massage therapist, it's much more personal than any other healthcare practitioner. You're in a room, a closed room. The lights are dim, and the person on your table is usually about 90% naked. So there is a feeling sometimes they're a little apprehensive, they're a little nervous. And before you could even start improving anything on them, you have to make sure they feel 100% safe. If they don't, we call that them bearing their armor, where they're locked up because they're just afraid. They're not sure of what's going to happen. They don't like a person touching their naked body. They're a little apprehensive. So what we have to do is it's called stripping the armor. So this makes it very challenging for a therapist to even begin to work. They have to strip the armor first. My analogy is this. You have a toothache. You go to the dentist. You tell the dentist, please fix my tooth. But guess what? I'm not opening up my mouth. Impossible for the dentist to fix the tooth. That's how it is. Unless we shear that armor from the person, all of our techniques, all of our knowledge, everything we do is useless until we get that person to feel 100% safe, comfortable, and relaxed. And only then could we get stuff done. A lot of people have a lot of baggage about getting touched. It's really something. I'm going to be very candid, if that's okay.
Go ahead. Yes.
Okay. A lot of guys don't want to be worked on by other guys because they're a little homophobic. Mm-hmm. A lot of women don't want to be worked on by a guy because they just don't feel comfortable with it.
Mm-hmm.
There are some women that they're okay with getting massaged by a guy, but their husband or boyfriend says no. So there's a lot of barriers that are there in the way that you have to break down. And how you break it down is you want to show, first and foremost, compassion. You want to validate their pain. These people are in pain. Something's wrong. They've usually been around the block to several places. Nobody's helping them. They're throwing pain pills at it, but nobody's getting to the root cause of the problem. You want them to know you care and you are validating what they're saying. Don't just ask where it hurts. Ask what kind of pain. Is it a stabbing pain, a throbbing pain? Is it a dull ache? When does it hurt most? In the morning, at night, as you're working? You show them you're fully interested and you want to tap into what they're going through. They start to trust you. And that's when they start shedding the armor. That's when things start opening up. And mm-hmm. then you can start working on it. But it takes a lot of sincerity on the therapist's part. but also a lot of professionalism. Then once you touch the person, that's a whole new ball game. But yeah,
I think it's a lot like, yeah, and it's a lot like when I was doing my yoga training, we did a lot about adjusting students, and it can be really hard to establish that trust. I've been adjusted by some yoga teachers, and my reaction is like, what are you doing? And it's not because I'm a yoga teacher. It's because they come up and don't tell me what they're doing. They just yank my body into some space. They don't know I'm hypermobile. They don't know that they've just taken me past my edge. They don't know that they've set me up for an injury. So we're...
This is a very...
You know, we were really trained in consent and in talking. We're more trained in giving a verbal cue for an adjustment than putting your hands on someone unless they're going to like blow out a joint. You know,
that is an amazing point you're bringing up. It's such an amazing point. In my profession, we call that checking in with the patient. Mm-hmm. You always want to keep checking in with them. And when it comes to that, when it comes to touch, once you've established a verbal rapport or some verbal trust, now you have to actually establish a trust through touch. And what we generally do, and Bonnie will probably tell you, is we won't go skin on skin immediately. We'll start off with compressions. And what that simply means is the sheet is still on the person, and we'll simply do some compressions, and it's called an introductory to touch. We want to gradually get into this. Yeah. We don't want to just throw a person in a pool of ice water.
Right.
We want to gradually get them used to the touch. And when I feel that I am starting to gain more trust from the patient and they're actually trusting my compressions, then you can almost feel the patient say, you know what, this feels pretty good. What else have you got? Now I know it's time to pull back the sheet and do some soft tissue manipulation. But again, you have to tap into the patient and do it at their pace. That's critical.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's talk about health a little bit, and let's journey down the body for our audience. When you are giving a massage, what are you looking for?
Oh, that's a great question. I'm looking for everything. I'm looking for everything. First and foremost, and this is a very general rule, and I may get some pushback on it, but I'm going to go out there anyway. I have found that unlike a house where the foundation is at the bottom, with the human body, the foundation is at the head. Usually where there's a problem in another part of the body, usually the root cause is a little higher. And does that make sense? The root cause is usually a little higher where they're fit. Not always, but a lot of the times, usually higher. And it's usually around the upper back and neck area. Let me explain.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You may say, well, I got a sciatic nerve problem. How could my neck and, you know, be involved? Let me explain. The brain is the control panel. It tells the body what to do, but it has to go through this little tiny funnel called the neck. So if the neck isn't right, it's not going to get the full signal the brain is sending to another body part. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes.
Neck has to be perfect. Otherwise, whatever you do to another part of the body, it's not going to be full value. So here's a guy with a sciatic nerve problem. What does the neck have to do with it? Very simple. If you stand in front of the mirror, you'll probably see that one shoulder is higher than the other. And in 90% of the cases, it'll be the left shoulder that's higher. The left shoulder is higher than the right shoulder, you've got a muscle that runs down parallel to your vertebrae, which is the erector. That goes from the neck all the way to the hip. And if your left shoulder is higher, that means you're lifting the erector with it. And if it's connected to the hip, the hip's being lifted. Mm-hmm. And now you'll pinch L4, L5, and there's your sciatic nerve.
Yep.
We have repaired sciatic nerves by just working the neck. And everything else falls in place. So I am looking for the questions. What am I looking for?
Yes. What are you looking for?
The root cause of their problem.
Yep.
My leg hurts. I know your leg hurts. Let's see if it is the leg or if it's the hip generating the pain. The right side of my back hurts. Yeah, I know the right side of your back hurts, but here's another example. The left side of the back has a significant knot. Because it's knotted up and it's contracting, it is the muscles which are attached to the vertebrae are pulling the vertebrae to the left towards the knot. Now we have a mild case of scoliosis, but that's on the left side. The patient is complaining the pain is on the right. If the vertebrae is being pulled to the left, the muscles on the right are now being overstretched.
Yep.
Do you see that? He's in pain or she's in pain. Oh, it's killing me. It's killing me. It's killing me. So if I loosen the muscles on the right side, I am creating more slack, and that knot will just continue to pull the vertebrae over to the left. That's exactly what we don't want to do. Mm-hmm. I tell the patient, I know you're hurting on the right side. The root cause is the left. Let me work this, and let's see how you feel. And when I release the muscles on the left side, the vertebrae starts to fall back into place, yes, on its own. And now the muscles on the right side are not overstretched anymore, and the pain starts to go away. So I'm looking for the root cause of people's problem. Mm-hmm. And it's not always where they think it is. Sometimes it is, and sometimes it isn't. So that's why I like to do full body work, because now I could explore and see where the real source is.
One of the things you mentioned too about computers, you know, affecting people sitting at desks for a long time and all of that. I think I had an issue like that as well. And you said, do some things while you're sitting there.
Yeah. One of the things is technology is great, but it's taking a toll on our body. If you take a look at yourself, I'll take a look at myself when I'm on the computer, I'm hunched over, leaning forward, my hands are on the keyboard, and my head is tilted towards the screen. If you were to just take a snapshot of yourself, you would probably see your upper back popping out a little bit because of your posture. Now, if you do this for 20 years, that's how you see a lot of older people. They have that like hump in the back. Clinically, it's called kyphosis. By sitting in that position at the computer, you're encouraging that kyphosis, which is exactly what you don't want. You don't want that. So what you want to do is little exercises every 20 minutes as you're on the computer. That'll take like 20 seconds to do. Or if you want to take the lazy man's way out, raise the computer screen higher so your head is not tilting forward and your back is much more straighter.
And if you throw in bifocals too. So you've got your hunched posture and you've got bifocals and you want to look at the computer screen. So your head is tilted back and your shoulders are excellent forward.
Excellent. Yes. Yes. Excellent point. Excellent point. The other killer that I see is the cell phones when we text. Where I live, the corner, it's right on the corner. It's a bus stop and all the kids aren't talking to each other. They're all texting and their chin is like almost in their chest. That's how tilted their head is. The scary part about that is their bones are still developing. They're going to develop in that shape. What we're going to do 20 years down the road, I don't know. But right now it's a little scary. So posture, repetitive motion, repetitive position. Yes, we need to analyze. You bring up a great point. We need to analyze the position we're in and fix it. Otherwise, we'll go into long-term problems, and they're called structural deviations, and we don't want them at all. But that was a great point you brought up.
Yeah. It's true, because so many people are really not aware of their body. So, and it's not that that's a bad thing. People just aren't aware. My hip hurts. Well, they don't know.
Right.
It's because they've got maybe a little something going on, higher or lower, you know, that's and they correct. Just don't quite get. And that's that great awareness that you can bring and that, you know, we try to do in the yoga world. We bring that awareness to their body. And you do that as a licensed massage therapist as well.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things I like to tell the patients is, you know, you probably bring your car in for regular maintenance and service. You're probably on top of your oil changes, your transmission changes, your alignments, how come you don't do that for you?
Yeah.
And I always tell them, we could get you another car for break. We, you know, you've had, you know, 10, 20, 30 cars in a lifetime. We get you another car. We can't get another you.
Yep.
Take care of yourself. Be aware of yourself. No, you know, the body's great. It's got an alarm system. It's called pain. If something hurts, look into it. So, no, your point is right on the money. Yeah. Right on the money.
What about women? Do you feel that, you know, this is women in comparison to men. Do you feel that women and men should get a certain amount of massages a week, or do you feel like women should get more?
That's a really good question. It really is. Okay. I'm gonna really roll the dice on this one because they're probably going to take my mail card away from me. They really are when I say this, but just don't give anybody my address. but women receive massages much better than the men do. Mm-hmm. Women are much more open-minded. Women are much more, in a way, trusting. If you're the professional, I trust you. Women are not afraid to kind of hand themselves over in a way to the practitioner because they feel they wouldn't be here if they weren't qualified. Guys, on the other hand, and, you know, I'll put myself in there too, we don't like to give up control. You know, typical guy, when we get lost, we don't ask for direction. A woman will. Mm-hmm. In the store, if I can't find the cereal, I won't ask for help. I'll look to find it myself. That's just how guys are. So we don't like to give up control or say we need help. So when I get a guy, they'll usually tell me where the pain is, tell me how they got the pain, and tell me what I need to do to fix it.
Interesting.
Yeah, this keeps them in control.
Okay? Yeah.
So actually, because of their mental state, women actually need less work because when I work on them, I could get more done because I'm not spending any time shedding their armor.
Yeah.
You see what I mean?
Yes.
With the guys, if I have it for 60 minutes, it could be 10, 15 minutes to shed their armor. And now I've lost that time to actually fix them.
Yeah.
So women get more bang for the buck during the session than the guys do. Now, that's a general statement, so I don't want guys beating me up, okay? That's a
general statement. How often should a person get a massage?
Once they if they have a problem, they should at least go for two massages a week until the problem starts to dissipate. And then, of course, you go to once a week. And then I would strongly suggest about a massage a month. Massages, we have to find a way in the industry to make them a little more cost-effective for people, you know, bring down the price. Because everybody needs a massage from time to time. Even myself, I do a lot of self-care, a lot, and like Pat with the yoga. But we all still need that hands-on because there's just some things we can't do by ourselves. So I would suggest once a month should be fine. As long as we're doing self-care at home, yes, once a month would be good.
That is good. Wow. So what are some of your plans and goals for the future?
Plans and goals. Everything I know, I want to amplify, and I want everybody to experience wellness. I want everybody to be body aware and understand the potential of their body, that their body wants to heal itself. It just needs a little direction. I want to share that with everybody. The other thing I want to do is research, research, and research. You know, when we learn something, a lot of people that are on the top of their game will say, oh, man, I really know everything and I just learned this today. Oh, I'm really good. No, that's not the attitude. The attitude should be, I thought I was at the top of my game. I didn't know this. What else is out there that I still don't know? Take a very humble approach towards gaining new knowledge. And don't forget, it was... because the information's out there. Who was it? It was George Washington Carver that prayed and said, Lord, show me the value of a peanut. What is in the, you know, the story? What is the value of the peanut? And everything opened. He took a very humble approach. He didn't know he was willing to learn. So we have to stay humble in our learning experience. For everything we know, how many things are out there that we still don't know? Stay humble, stay focused, and just try to help people in any way you can, in any way you can. So that would be the long-term goal I have.
Wow. Thank you so much, Lawrence, for joining us to talk about how we all can be in our best health. And I just want to give a shout out and a special thanks once again to Gloria Dallinger, who was on earlier, and to say, remember, don't let age change you. Change the way you go. Until next time, I'm Bonnie Winfrey along with Pat Perrier. And just one more shout out to you, Lawrence. Thank you, thank you, thank you.